Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks, and happy Friday, everyone. And because it's Friday, let's jump right into our week in review, beginning with the aftermath of the year's first big winter storm, which dumped up to a foot and a half of snow, knocked out power, closed schools, brought much of the state to a standstill. The nor'easter, along with historic high tides, brought flooding to coastal communities, including Boston's waterfront. Here's Boston Mayor Marty Walsh.
If anyone wants to question global warming, just see where the flood zones are. Those zones didn't flood 30 years ago, some of those areas. Some of those areas did, but I think this is a reminder today of what could happen in a storm like this.
State Secretary of Transportation Stephanie Pollack warns of continued transportation delays.
The buses may continue to be affected by road conditions, may continue to run on snow routes, may continue to see delays that are beyond the control of our bus operators.
And now comes a weekend deep freeze. Here's WBUR meteorologist David Epstein.
We're not looking at winds as strong as we saw yesterday. However, the winds will be strong enough to keep wind chill values below zero today, tonight, Saturday, Saturday night, and early Sunday.
Well, joining us now in the studio to discuss this and the rest of the week's news is Susan Tracy, president of the Democratic consulting firm, The Strategy Group. She's also a former state rep. Susan, thanks for coming in. Always good to see you.
Thanks, Anthony.
And Richard Tessay, former Republican leader of the Massachusetts State Senate. Richard, always good to see you as
well. Nice to be back.
So cities and towns are cleaning up. How did they do in your neck of the woods? Richard, let me start with you.
I'm out in Wakefield, and everything actually was done pretty well.
Yeah?
Windy, but and a lot of snow, but very well handled.
Yeah. What did you see, Susan?
I'm in Newton. I live on the end of a dead-end street, so I'm usually like the last in the line for plowing. And so far, so good. So they didn't seem to do a nice job up there.
All right. Well, I want to talk about the flooding we heard at the top of the show. Governor Charlie Baker was asked about it, about sort of the historical context of the flooding last night. Here's a little of what he said.
My own memory, the most significant flooding I ever saw outside of the city along the coast was actually the no-name storm in the 90s. Let's face it, if I have to go back over 25 years to come up with a time in which we had flooding that reached the level we saw today, that's a very long time.
So we also heard reports of flooding in the Seaport District, Fort Point, Long Wharf, Barnstable, Marshfield, Scituate, Hull, Winthrop, Quincy, Chatham, Gloucester, to name just a few. Susan, I mean, this is, like Charlie Baker said, you've got to go back a long way to, recall when there was flooding like this. Is this an important warning about climate change? How do you read this?
Well, I think we've had a lot of important warnings about climate change. I think the science is there. I think, you know, even those of us who have a long horizon on storms, sadly, I'm one of those people now, I think we'd all agree that it just seems different these days. Katrina's and Maria's, and just, it's just something that I don't think any of us are used to. And the really dramatic temperature swings, you know, these bitter cold days and then these boiling warm days in winter. So I think we'd all agree. I mean, something's up. This is not the norm as we know it.
I agree. Richard, does this mean that we need better plans to get ready for, to sort of to respond to global warming? And you think Boston is doing it?
Well, I think you have to actually look to the future and do have a plan in place, because climate change is taking place. It's taken place throughout the whole history of the Earth. But I do think that this was a bad storm, and obviously the flooding aspect, I would think back to this blizzard of 78, which is what everybody compares it to. But I do think that the news media, you know, back in 1978 and back when I was growing up, people accepted being New Englanders, I think, a little more than they do now.
You mean it's winter, it's snowing, get over it.
And I think there's a lot more media outlets right now, and everybody hypes it up. And, at the end of the day, it's we're New England and we're going to get pretty, tough
put your
storms
boots
on occasion.
I mean, I agree, but there's also a social media aspect to this that sort of hypes it up. But on some of those pictures yesterday, when you see dumpsters sort of float down on Atlantic Avenue in Boston, it does sort of make you wonder. But speaking of this, the city's Climate Ready Boston report brought up the idea of a seawall, much like the one that's under construction in Venice, Italy, that would run through Boston Harbor to protect the city from rising sea levels and storm surge. Price tag, $10 billion. What do you think, Susan?
Well, $10 billion is going to be problematic.
But sooner or later, it adds up to real money.
Right? Yeah, exactly. But I do think we have to do something, especially when you look at the amount of development that's taking place in the city. I mean, you know, $10 billion there, but there's billions and billions of dollars of pretty important assets at stake. So I think, you know, we can keep looking the other way, or we can say, you know, we care about the future of our city and we need to do something.
And in a place like the seaport, I think you can put a lot of thought into potentially, you know, what could happen. I mean, some of the development, you know, we're in a development boom right now, and it's probably worthwhile to review everything that's taking place as to whether or not it's going to be able to stand up to the changes that are taking place in the climate, you know, 10 or 15 or 20 years down the road.
So let me ask you both about how you think the MBTA fared, or maybe it's better to say, how is it faring? We've got a lot of cold weather coming this weekend. WBUR spoke with Luis Ramirez, the new general manager of the MBTA. He talked about a $100 million investment in new third rails, plowing equipment, new training, and a new emergency response operations center. Here's what he said.
I think in the past 3 years, what you can see is that we've spent a lot of time actually reviewing all of our procedures and really trying to get the system and the people trained in a way to really deal with these types of challenges.
So we all remember the winter of 2015 and how it paralyzed the T. Governor Baker made reorganizing the MBTA one of his priorities. The storm caused some delays, but overall, was this a successful test to the governor's plan to overhaul the MBTA, Richard?
I would give him a good mark, the MBTA, because, I mean, there are certain things you can't do anything about, obviously. You can't have ferries running with the waves and the conditions that we just saw, buses, obviously, of the streets in pretty bad shape. But overall, I think, you know, 3 years ago, the T just pretty much collapsed. And it collapsed because there had been 30 years of non-investment in some of the capital, the non-sexy items, you know, like signal, infrastructure.
And, right.
And those were, some of those were 100 years old, the signals, and they just couldn't hold up to the weather. So, you know, the plan that was put in place, the $100 million, I think, is, you know, maybe not as much as, perfect, but it was certainly a pretty sizable contribution. And I think, you know, going for, and I don't want people to think that's the only thing that's been going on at the T, because there are big ticket items, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars are being spent. You know, the orange and the red line, cars are going to be coming in. They're all going to be new. So there's a lot of work that's going on and I think they passed the test.
Yeah. What do you think, Susan? Do you agree?
Couple of thoughts. I think, you know, 2015 certainly was a low bar. I mean, we shut down our transit system, and that just shouldn't happen in a major city. So I think we had, we had nowhere to go but up, and we needed to go up. So I didn't take the T today, so I don't know that I'm the right person to speak to whether it all worked. I do think, just from what I pick up on social media and what I pick up in the media, it doesn't seem that people are complaining as much. It doesn't seem that you've had, you know, sort of Twittersphere go crazy saying I've been standing here in the bitter cold for 20 minutes. I do agree with an earlier point that you made, Richard, which is we live in New England, and, you know, these storms are hard, and I think sometimes we put too much pressure on government to, like, have everything, you know, buffed up and clean and ready to roll in a matter of minutes. There's a lot of work. And so it appears that things went really well. I guess, you know, we'll have to see if that's true, but that's what it seems. And, you know, we need it to go well because that infrastructure is critical.
And I would say there are a lot of politics that are centered around the MBTA right now, because I do think 3 years ago when the T pretty much shut down, that was really the incident, you know, and it was over a couple of weeks that really people got to know Charlie Baker. He had just been sworn into office, and all of a sudden he was dealing with this. He probably got millions and millions of dollars worth of publicity, and just, again, people seeing him on TV, getting to know who he was. He owns the MBTA right now. If anything goes wrong, when that storm started and we recognized the severity of it, you know, the first thing I thought is, oh, I hope Charlie makes it through the you know, without a huge problem.
Well, so far, so good.
If there is a problem, it's going to be amplified, and it's going to become political.
Well, let's move on, because I want to talk about some other stories. Storms are big tests for mayors. This week's storm hit just days after a number of mayors were sworn into office. Framingham's Yvonne Spicer was sworn in as the city's first ever mayor. Ruth Ann Fuller became the new mayor of Newton, Thomas McGinn in Lynn. And here in Boston, Mayor Marty Walsh was inaugurated for his second term on Monday. And the big theme of his inaugural address, a commitment to make Boston work for everyone, including the working and middle classes. Here's a bit of what he said.
We have to show a way forward. In my second term, I will prioritize the fundamentals of the middle class opportunity in our world-class city. Strong 21st century schools, good jobs, affordable homes in safe neighborhoods, a better Boston for everyone.
So, Susan, I'll start with you because you're a Boston native. Did you like Mayor Walsh's hopeful vision for the future? What did you think of the address?
I did. I was there on Monday, and I think that's the right place to be and the right tone. I think a lot of people feel that sort of at the top of the ladder, whether it's from a housing or jobs perspective, that part of our city is doing pretty well. And I think he spoke to homelessness and some of, you know, those most in need as well. So I think we should say that. But for Boston to really go forward and survive and to be a, you know, the great city that it is and continue to be, it needs a middle class and mm-hmm. it needs a working class. And I actually was really pleased that he made that a priority in his speech.
It's a big riddle, though, isn't it? I mean, a city that is sort of a world-class innovation center, financial services center, it's bringing lots of high-paying jobs. But by definition, that's going to put pressure on the middle and lower classes as it has. What did you hear in Mayor Walsh's second inaugural address?
Well, I think the mayor did a great job in his first term, and I think laying out in his second term, I was interested in ensuring that there's a middle class in Boston, but also the development that's taking place. I think he's done a pretty good job right now, and I don't think people recognize just how much development's going on. He really has the opportunity to really put his print on the city for many, many decades to come. And I think he's managed things well so far. And people like him. And I think they feel people feel very comfortable with him and think that he has a good leadership style. And you know, the second term is going to be harder than the first in a way because you have problems that don't go away. The school system still needs to be improved. And there are other areas that, there is a housing crisis in the city. But overall, I think people are very happy with the direction.
I want to ask you both about a former Vice President Joe Biden, who was there presiding over the event. He was sort of there as a guest of honor. And he picked up on this sort of need to prop up the middle class. And he said that the most progressive thing leaders can do is to invest in things that can change people's lives. Here's what he said.
From access to continuing education after high school, to universal health coverage, to affordable child care, job training, a fair tax system. I could go on, but I won't. Because it means we're not only giving middle-class people the ability to fulfill their dreams, we're giving the poor a way up. We're giving them hope.
Former Vice President Joe Biden. Now, a bunch of people have noted that sounded like a speech not only of a guy just doing his buddy Mayor Walsh a solid and showing up on inauguration, but it sort of sounded like a guy who was running a political candidate. What did you think, Susan, the idea of Joe Biden sort of kicking off a campaign there in Boston?
I think that that's a fair observation. I'm sure he hasn't gotten it out of his system yet. He's been in elected life for a very long time. He's out now. I'm sure he watches what's going on nationally the way many people do and says, you know, this isn't the way it should be. He's part of the Obama legacy, and I'm sure it is really hard to watch, the attempt to dismantle that. So, I got to believe the pilot light is still on somewhere. Yeah. Whether he does it or not remains to be seen. But
well, you're a Democratic consultant. Yeah. What do you think? I mean, is he a viable candidate? I mean, the issue of his age is always raised, but would you be comfortable with the Democrats getting behind someone like Joe Biden?
Yeah, I think he's a viable candidate. I mean, if Mitt Romney is a viable candidate, I would think they're about the same age, aren't they? You know, yes, absolutely. What, I mean, he's a man who has served as vice president to an extremely popular Democratic president who served in the United States Senate. And absolutely, I think he is someone who could very well be a candidate. Whether he will be or not, don't know, but sure.
Yeah. What do you think, Richard?
As a Republican, I'm rooting for Elizabeth Warren, who noticeably was absent from that particular event.
Well, she was out in Framingham, with Yvonne Spicer, right?
She was, yeah.
But I think in his case, you know, in Biden's case, Marty Walsh is exactly the type of Democrat that he needs to get behind him, and that would be attracted to him if he ends up running. So, I mean, it was a smart political move to go and in his type of constituency, I think.
Yep.
Well, let's move on. I want to touch on marijuana. The Trump administration yesterday ended an Obama-era policy that could have a big impact on Massachusetts and states like Massachusetts, where pot has been legalized. Under federal law, pot remains illegal, though the previous administration discouraged federal prosecutors from enforcing the law in states that have legalized pot. Now, Attorney General Jeff Sessions has freed federal prosecutors essentially to enforce the federal law more aggressively. Governor Baker and Attorney General Maura Healey have come out against this decision. And we spoke to Jim Borgasani, spokesman for the Marijuana Policy Project, commending both of them. Here's a bit of what he said.
Clearly, they are recognizing and respecting the will of voters as expressed in November 2016. Clearly, Jeff Sessions is not.
So, Richard, what did you make of this? I mean, is this a case of the Trump administration not respecting the will of voters in states like Massachusetts and Colorado and elsewhere?
I think it's a case that the voters are ahead of government and that the states are ahead of the federal government on this. And this is just unnecessary. Aaron, if you look at all the nuances of what is being actually done, it doesn't really amount to anything. It's not going to change anything here in Massachusetts. I doubt the new U.S. attorney is going to come in and go after the state. It's pretty clear that he's already come out and said he's not going to change anything within the regulatory structure that's being created here in Massachusetts. With everything going on in Washington, it's amazing. You know, Jeff Sessions, he's got, you know, immigration, he's got terrorism, he's got all these different things to pay attention to, and he's bringing this up as an issue, and it's just Donald Trump's worst appointment.
Well, let me just, you mentioned the U.S. attorney, and we've got the statement from U.S. Attorney Andrew Lelling right here. It's a long one. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but here's what reads like a key line to me. I'm not exactly sure how to interpret it. As a result of this new policy, our office will aggressively investigate and prosecute bulk cultivation and trafficking cases and those who use the federal banking system illegally. So, Susan, it doesn't sound like that's going to be a problem for new pot dispensaries or medical marijuana dispensaries or whatever might happen here.
You know, there's two things. I think there's probably is some financing issues that could be at stake because, you know, federally it's still a controlled substance. Most major banks won't lend. So there might be some financing issues that are in play for some or not in play for some, you know, people who want to get into this industry. But what strikes me the most is what a major political stumble that is by Jeff Sessions. I mean, think about this. You know, you're already in a place where you have a president with extremely low popularity ratings, especially with young voters. 71% of young voters support the legalization of you know, sales of marijuana. And now you've given an issue to the millennial voter who, you know, let's face it, isn't always the first to the polls on election day to get ginned up about. You've divided Republicans and Democrats because obviously you got, you know, a senator from Colorado.
Yeah. A Republican senator who was really quite vocal
agitated,
speaking out against it. Yeah.
It's over $2 billion of the Colorado economy right now. So I feel that, you know, even if things don't change, and by the way, all you need is one aggressive U.S. attorney doing something to create a really bad political problem, I think, for the Republicans on this one. So I just think it's dumb. If you made me pick one word, I don't understand it politically.
You know, there are so many great things going on right now. The The stock market was over 25,000. I mean, the economy is really starting to rev up as a result of the tax cuts. And why you would want to shift attention to something like this doesn't make any sense at all. And again, you know, Massachusetts, you have the Cannabis Control Commission right now that just put out regulations. They've set up a framework here in Massachusetts. This isn't going to affect us, I think, in any way, except that it is terrible publicity and a political stumble.
Yeah. I mean, one way that it might affect people, and we've heard this from folks who look at this, is that in a state like Massachusetts that's beginning to set things up, it could actually suppress. I mean, it sort of puts a legal cloud over the marijuana industry and could suppress new investment in it.
Well, there's been a little bit of a legal cloud anyways, because, you know, what really should happen is that the Congress should change the law.
Federally.
Right. But you have Massachusetts law it's been passed by the voters, and there really isn't a question here at all, I think, because you have the governor and you have the attorney general. They're both on the same page. You know, whether you like the question or not, I think most people here in this state respect the will of the voters and understand that there's, you know, it's been decided, there's a process being set up, and to have the federal government intrude upon the state in any way right now, I think there'd be a huge backlash.
All right. We have just enough time for our hubbubs, those little stories or events that caught our attention this week and maybe didn't make it onto the front pages. Susan, let me start with you. What's your hubbub?
Sure. I'm going to give a shout out to Bill Forey at the Dorchester Reporter because, I don't know, probably like hopefully some people listening, I am done with listening to snow stories. And what he does is he reports, he has a hashtag, open and dot, and Billy Forey tells you which bars, restaurants and coffee shops are open when there's a snow day.
Right.
And I don't live in Dorchester, but I like the concept, so I give Billy Forey a shout out.
It's funny you mentioned that, because yesterday I was looking at my Twitter feed and Bill Forey had tweeted out, the Erie Pub is open.
Exactly.
And I thought, all right, that's useful information.
Bingo.
That's great. Okay, Richard,
all right,
you're
so up. Mine, given the weather over the last week or so, I admit I did a double take when I saw this story. I thought it would be a good hubbub. Do you know that Sunday, January 7th, is the 17th annual No Pants Subway Ride that's going to take place in Boston and a number of other cities around the country and around the world.
No pants.
Now, according to the post, Facebook post for the group, during the No Pants Subway Ride, participants will ride in various T-lines wearing all of their normal winter clothes with the minor exception of missing pants. You heard that right. That's the most important part of the ride, is that the participants have to act as though nothing is out of the ordinary. And I guess this started as a prank 17 years ago in New York, and it's grown every year since. So if people want to participate, they can go to the Facebook page and
mark your calendars.
Yeah,
January,
exactly.
January what?
It's January 7th, but I got to say, okay, would it be better for them to do this in August than right now?
All right. Well, here's my hubbub. It's a shout out to all those people who work outside through the kind of nasty weather we had yesterday. And here on Radio Boston, we heard yesterday from James of Newton, who said he was a mail carrier and who, after working all day delivering the mail on foot, called us to say he was unable to drive down his own street to get home because it hadn't been plowed yet. But he was full of good humor. And here's a bit of our interaction. Thanks for the work you do. What's the motto of the U.S. Postal Service? You're not going to be slowed down.
No, nor rain, nor heat, nor gloom of night shall save these couriers from the swift completion of their appointed route.
All right. So with that sentiment in mind, here's a big thank you to all the first responders, the people plowing, shoveling, the mail carriers, and everyone else who had to work yesterday and every day, including James, the mail carrier from Newton. Richard Tessay, former Republican leader of the Massachusetts State Senate, thanks for coming in. Sure. Have a great weekend. Stay warm. And same to you, Stacey, Susan Tracy, president of the Democratic Consulting Firm, the Strategy Group. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks, Anthony. And the post office is hiring.
All right. Stay with us. Coming up, Congressman Stephen Lynch joins us live in the studio. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.